So welcome everyone, glad you're here. And we'll be talking about bringing the body into our meditation tonight. And the Buddha spoke in many places and circumstances about the body as the object of concentration. Contemplation on the body is a source of joy that leads to deepening concentration. He talks about mindfulness of the body being the simplest way to work with delusion. So where we are misguided or we misunderstand the reality, we can take our attention to the body. And the body tells the truth. So the brain makes up stories. It's very creative. It has lots of thoughts and ideas and projections and fantasies and elaborations of stories that may or may not have actually happened taking place. But the body has no capacity to do that. It just gives accurate, on-time information, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. It's what's happening now. We can't argue with direct experience. So apparently the Buddha said something along the lines of bhikkhus, which are the monks. When one develops mindfulness of the body, Mara cannot find an opportunity or a support. And so Mara is like the destructive energy preventing enlightenment. So, Mara can't find a support. It's like can't take hold. There's no place for it to land. So when we have thoughts in our brains, a lot of the time we tend to believe those thoughts. Well, they must be true. They happened in my own head. Not really. We don't have to believe our own thoughts. What a concept. What a thought. Most of the time, we get over-identified with our thoughts. Oh, someone told me that one time, or I learned that, or I picked that up somewhere from something, from my experience, or from what I heard from my parents, or my teachers, or my friends, or coworkers, or whatever it was. And all of a sudden, I think that's true. It must be true. They told me, so therefore, I believe it. But the problem is we over-identify with those thoughts that we think, oh, that must be who I am. We go on and on. We can go on for years, decades, a whole lifetime, believing something that happened way back when. But the body is always changing, and it shows us directly that what we ate yesterday or an hour ago changes how we feel. Or what we thought yesterday changes our experience. So we, Deepak Chopra, I remember him saying in a book or in a talk I heard long ago, we have a new body every day, which is good news. Our cells are constantly dying off and rebuilding. And so our stomach lining gets replaced about every 3 days or so. I could have the timing a little off, but I'm just so that you get the point. We had a new liver every 6 months or so. We had a whole new skeleton every year and a half or so. So we're always shifting and changing. Our bodies get old. They get injured. They get sick. They eventually die. We don't like to hear that, but it's actually the truth. So it teaches us a lot about impermanence. It teaches us that we're not who we thought we were. But that idea that we had about this body, that can change. Which is the good news and the bad news, simultaneously. So many times when we're meditating, we might be invited or instructed to pay attention to the breathing. That's the one thing that we can count on that's always there. And paying attention to the breathing, not as an exercise or a practice that we do to improve ourselves or get somewhere or be better breathers, but breathing can be a training in mindfulness. When we're aware of our breathing, we can become aware that, oh, we've forgotten about the breathing. Oh, I was supposed to be paying attention to my breathing now. Oh, yeah, I was thinking about something else. And come back to it. So it's kind of a little bit of a training ground in concentration. When we're aware of our breathing, we can be aware of being human. Oh, I have lungs. I feel this sensation. My belly is moving as I breathe. My chest is moving. I might feel it in my nose. But we can also be aware that this breathing is mysterious. I don't know how it happens. I don't really do anything to make it happen. I can feel my inhale coming in. I can feel it going out. But there's not a whole lot of effort unless I have asthma or cold or something like that. Then it becomes more difficult and more effortful. But typically, breathing is just happening in the background of whatever else we're doing in our lives. We could be sleeping, we could be eating, we could be moving, we could be resting. We're breathing the whole time. We've been doing it since day one. It's the first thing we look for in a newborn baby. It's the last thing we'll do before we start to check out, apparently. So in the meantime, it can remind us of our humanness. And the struggles, because the breathing is reflected when we're stressed, right? When we're upset, when we're stressed, that breathing is revealed as a little bit more erratic or difficult. And when we're feeling very loved and at ease and comfortable and supported, that breathing is very different. So we can remember that, oh, we're human. We have breath. But we're also more than human somehow. We're divine. We have this mysteriousness moving through us all the time. This miracle. And so the word for breath is sometimes referred to as inspiration. Inspiration. Where does inspiration come from? Maybe it's a divine mystery. So be aware of your breathing right now. See if you notice that you're not actually taking a breath, but breathing just comes, kind of like grace. Breathing just arrives, whether you're feeling you're deserving of it or not, kind of like grace. Notice that you're not really efforting to exhale. It's just unfolding. So let's begin to notice body sensations in order to connect with ourselves. And why would we want to connect with ourselves? Well, let me ask a couple of questions and then maybe the answer will come through that. When you're hungry, how do you know you're hungry? There's probably a sensation in your body. Belly feels kind of growly and contracted and a little tense. Or maybe you get angry. You get a little grumpy. Hungry, angry, irritable. So there's something going on. Can feel it. How about angry? When you're really angry, do your muscles get tight? Do you feel it in your chest? Is there a contraction in your mouth? Do you have this energy that seems to be just rising up? So different people may have different sensations of these things. How about tired? How does that feel in your body? Not just as an idea, but a felt sensation in your limbs, in your muscles. Your eyes get droopy. Your jaw gets relaxed. So these energies in our bodies have some sensations, some information. And the word for that, scientific word, interoception. You could also say embodiment. These are all words to describe what it's like to be awake or aware inside. So we don't have to always be thinking, planning, remembering, rationalizing, heady stuff. We can actually be aware of the body as well. And we've got capacity to access all that energy, all that wisdom that comes from the head. So one of the definitions of interoception is the capacity to feel and respond to body signals. And I think the value of that is that we're capable of taking care of ourselves. We actually have the responsibility to take care of this body, right? To some degree, if we are to grow and evolve, you know, we can take care of ourselves in order to do that. So we can be paying attention on purpose, non-judgmentally, to present moment body sensations. Just like we pay attention on purpose and non-judgmentally to our thoughts, to our breathing. So this is inside information. You have access to inside information. So inside information can be muscles. Maybe your muscles feel a little contracted. Maybe there's some tension. Or maybe there's relaxation. You might have areas that are contracted, other areas that are relatively relaxed. You might have a sore muscle. Or you might have muscles that feel nicely massaged, well cared for. Your heart rate, that's another body sensation that we can be aware of. Is it fast? Is it slow? If we're running, exercising, that heart's going to respond. It's going to give us what we need, energy and circulation, activation and heat. Your skin, another body sensation. Is it dry? Is it cool? Is it warm? Is it sweaty? Is it itchy? All those body sensations are giving us good information. Breathing, too. It's another one. We talked about that already. So there's this branch of science called epigenetics. Epigenetics is the study of how our DNA responds. And it's been found that we respond to our environment much more than we thought in the past. Our cells actually listen and respond to our thoughts, which is kind of a new concept these days, at least it is for me. There's a common misconception, which I certainly subscribe to for most of my life, that our DNA determines our destiny. That, well, it runs in my family, I can't do anything about it. I'm probably prone to that thing that runs in my family, that my dad had, my mom had, my sisters have, my brother had, other family members. So we kind of look at that and say, well, there's nothing I can do. That's just the cards I've been dealt with. Actually, that's not exactly true. So when we listen to our body and we don't believe every thought we've ever had or everything we've ever heard, we start to question, is that true? What do I really feel about that inside? In my heart, in my belly, in my limbs? What do I actually feel when I hear something? Is this true for me? Truth can be kind of a wavy term. Truth can shift and change. When we listen to our bodies, we begin to discover our own power. And we can listen to and we can work with our bodies. We're not stuck. We're not broken as we might have imagined we were. We don't have no responsibility. We have responsibility is what I'm trying to say. We actually do have responsibility. So let's do a little experiment, if you'd like. Let's bring our hands to our body. And your hands can be on your legs. You might put your hands on your belly. You might have your hands over your heart or on your face. So you decide. Just let your hands rest on your body in any way. As an experiment. And here's the question. What's the quality of your touch? And by that I mean, are you touching your body in a way that conveys kindness or connection? Or is your touch a little bit less nurturing? Maybe it's a little bit removed. Even though your hands are resting on your body, are you really connecting? What do you feel through your hands? Do you feel the pressure? Do you feel the warmth or the coolness? Do you feel the space that your hands take up on your body? What do you notice, if anything at all? And if you don't notice much, then that's your experience. And if you notice something, that's your experience. So there's no failure or success. It's just what's happening right now. Second question. What are your beliefs about your body's ability to heal? Can you heal? Is your body a participant? You can either keep your hands there or just let them relax whenever you'd like. If it feels pretty good, do more of that. If it doesn't feel great, skip it. So it's not enough to know about the body, to take a course or to study a book or to learn something about the body. It's actually pretty necessary to include the body as our teacher. In fact, we've heard it said in trauma therapy that if we just talk about the issue, it's pretty good, but it's not everything. It doesn't get to the root cause. We have to actually move the body, include the body in the healing process. We have to let that trauma be known to the body, help it to find its expression. And there's this modality called organic intelligence, which points to the practice of the body having a wisdom all its own. It said we have a gut brain, a heart brain, and a head brain. The head brain actually has the least amount of neural connections, the least amount of potential, activity. The heart actually has the most, and the gut, intestines, and the digestive organs have the second most. So there is a wisdom there. There's an intelligence there. So medical education provided to doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and so on doesn't actually honor the natural wisdom of the body so much. The body that's undisturbed by conditioning or expectations or limiting beliefs. So let's imagine that we didn't have any conditioning. We didn't have expectations or limiting beliefs about our bodies. We just came in fresh, like a brand new baby. Let's imagine that we could do anything and our bodies are capable of more than we imagined, physical feats that we couldn't imagine. And this might be revealed with athletes who do this amazing feat, and then the record is set. And then before you know it, another athlete and another athlete and another athlete will surpass that record-setting event, right? So as a birth doula is one of the things that I do. I help women who are pregnant and giving birth. And some women will choose, and if their bodies and all the conditions are aligned just right, they will choose to give birth without medications or interventions as best they can. So some choose a natural birth, believing that their hormones will give them what they need. Everything that a pharmacy promises is already within. So they believe that they'll have enough energy to endure the process, however long that might be. They believe they'll have enough strength and hope and have that anxiety kind of at bay. They believe they'll have pain relief. They believe they'll have sleep when they need it. They believe that they will be flooded with joy and connection when the time is right, when their baby is in their arms. And they believe that they'll be able to manage their blood flow, that it won't be too much or too little, and that their tissues will repair well. And so if we believe that all of that is true, the likelihood is greater when we're not afraid and we're not constricted and we don't have the belief that no way can I do that. So sometimes it unfolds like that. What if we were to not pay attention to the body at all? Let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Totally believing in the body is one end. Not paying any attention at all. Ignoring the body. I'll just push through this pain. Just power through it. I'll just forget that event that happened that was really a big thing. But I'm just going to turn my mind away from that and get on with life. We've tried that. So when I was researching this, I heard someone say, and I wrote it down real quick because it was very, might be triggering. So trigger alert, information coming that you might find somewhat unbelievable, or you might have questions about it. But she said, and I can't quote who she is or where I even found it. It was on a webinar, but I don't know who she is. But she talked about diseases of disconnection. So when we're disconnected from the body, diseases of disconnection might be the result of that. And she said that there are four of them. Addiction, eating disorders, depression, anxiety. Wow. When I think of addiction, I think of escape. Don't want to feel this. Don't want to be in my body. Let me get rid of that. When I think of eating disorders, I think of covering, smothering, squashing those emotions. Just put more food on top of that. When I think of depression, I think of denying, perhaps. When I think of anxiety, I think of fighting. I don't know what you think of that. It's just throwing it out there for your consideration. Buddha told his son, Rahula, see all phenomena with proper wisdom. This is not mine, not me. The body is not mine. So perhaps we come into this lifetime in this package. We call it a body, but it's not really me. It's part of me. I have a body, but it's not everything. It's not all of me. I might say, I feel my leg, or my foot fell asleep. I've said that. But there's no sensation called leg. my foot doesn't actually fall asleep. What I really feel, what might be more accurate to say is, I feel heavy in my leg. My legs are tired, maybe I feel some heaviness. Or I feel lightness, I feel like running. Or I feel pressure. Or I feel tingling. Asleep. Or I feel tightening, or softening, or whatever it might be. So if I use descriptive words, that could be a little bit more accurate. So in meditation, we recognize the mental idea, my body. I have a body that's sitting here right now. It's uncomfortable, or it's pretty comfortable right now. Having a kind of an easy time with it right now. But when we're in meditation, we might open to not the idea of the body, but the realization of body as a changing energy field. My body doesn't actually end here. It's kind of not in that boundary that I first imagined it was. It might be more than that. I remember when I first started to meditate, and I didn't know anything about it. I didn't have any preconceived notions. I didn't have any books that I had read. I just kind of knew the concept of it. And I decided, I'm going to try to meditate. So I sat down, and I felt big. I felt expansive. I felt somehow lighter. And I remember ending that meditation, and this happened several times, so it wasn't just one time, but wanting to go and look in the mirror. And when I did, that image that was reflected back to me was so different, so limited, so unlike that feeling that I had when I meditated. And I thought, that's not me in the mirror. How could that be me when I experience myself so differently in meditation? And I have to say that I don't have that experience much anymore. And I think it's because I've learned a thing or two about meditation. And maybe those ideas, maybe they're true, maybe they're not true, maybe they're conditioning, maybe they're other people's opinions about what meditation is. So throw that out there for your consideration and mine too. So if I can meditate like the beginner again, if I can lose my preconceived notions and loosen my attachments to what this means, when I feel this sensation, what does that mean? I got to analyze it. When I can loosen all of that, I can loosen craving. I can loosen aversion. I can loosen conceit. That's what the Buddha says. I added one more that I can lose. And I don't think this was so common in the Buddha's time or in different cultures, but it's definitely common in our American culture. I can lose self-hatred. I can lose that judgment about myself. So let's try another thing. How about very, very slowly open and close your fingers? Just open and close fingers as slowly as you'd like. And begin to just notice the feeling of fingers stretching open, fingers slowly curling back in. Maybe one more time, opening the fingers wide, stretching, feeling something, closing them back in. And just make a little mental note of that experience. And then take your hands together and rub them really fast, really vigorously, fast, 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 rub, rub, rub. Rub your hands together, friction. And just make a little mental note of what this is like. And then let it go. And track sensations. Something happens when the movement stops, too. Find a descriptive word that identifies. What's this feeling? Track it. It's changing. It's not the same as it was a couple seconds ago. The feeling of opening and closing slowly is really different from rubbing vigorously. So tracking the sensations that you're aware of is like meditation in the body. The body gets to play. The body gets to play. So what I mean by that is this body was meant to experience all kinds of pleasant, maybe unpleasant sensations too, but how long has it been since you've let your body just play? So the organic intelligence model invites us to look for pleasant sensations in the body. What feels comfortable, warm, relaxed? What feels expansive, playful, light, spacious? What if in your meditation you were to just soak in goodness and pleasantness and lightness? What if you didn't try so hard? What if you let that be your experience and let that be the way that your nervous system relearns how to move back into its natural state before we learned all these other things, before we had all these other experiences? And isn't that what meditation is kind of helping us to do, to unlearn? So one last thing. When your body feels better on the inside, and you're noticing that, and you're tracking it, and you're honoring that that's what happens, it's a lot less likely that you'll crave external comfort, like destructive substances or behaviors, or thoughts of escaping, or smothering, or denying, fighting.